we're so touched and happy that you're here. And I'm very amazed at all of you traveling this distance. So let's ask one of you who feels like answering. So the rest of us can know, what is the purpose of your journey?
I would say that the general purpose of the trip is to gain some sort of cultural insight into different cultures in New York City and the American culture in general.
Uh-huh, good.
Yeah.
So do you feel that you've accomplished that, or that, yeah? Do you feel others looking at, let's ask you, since you nodded your head.
Different
cultures, and you did that by visiting different religious places, spiritual groups?
Yeah, also religious places.
I see, not only?
Not only.
Okay, so tell me where you went. I'd like to know.
Went to a school in Brooklyn.
You went to a school?
In Brooklyn. Yes.
In Brooklyn?
Yeah.
Like a high school?
Collaborative studies.
Yeah. Collaborative studies? Sounds good.
Yeah. And they stayed in private homes for 2 nights.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
That must have been interesting.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. With homes with children of age, same age, or not necessarily?
About the same.
How old are you, more or less, as a group?
18.
Mm-hmm. So just, but you've graduated, or?
Not yet.
Mm-hmm.
Next one more year.
Yeah. One more year? Oh, it's longer. So, this is wonderful. Yeah. And you feel, I can feel that many of you feel good about the travel, but you're probably also longing to get home by now. A little homesick?
No.
Not too homesick? No. That's good. And so what else did you do? You went to a school? What else did you do?
Village Zendo.
Oh, Village Zendo. Oh, that's wonderful. Oh, that must have been interesting. Yeah. And you sat in meditation then?
Yeah.
How long?
An hour.
Oh, good. Okay. Well, that's a very interesting experience, actually. Even just to sit silently for an hour is a very powerful thing. So here you will experience something different, but really, essentially, you might touch into the same core as the silent sitting, because both, I think, are intended to reach the deeper self, you know. And our way, or part of it, there is also silence in Sufism. And, you know, actually it's highly recommended, at times also a retreat. And basically cultivating that inner silence, which is really a kind of also silencing, letting the mind go silent and focusing on the heart. So very much Sufism focuses on the heart center. And through the heart center, it's very interesting, as we go into the heart center, even it's like a charging, really, and it's like a potentiating the life force, but it will quiet the mind also. And so you will experience tonight the what's called the Vikrula, the prayer of mutual remembrance, where we chant the divine names of God together. And I'll go through it with you a little bit, because I think it would help just to be oriented. We'll chant a few names, which I will mention right now. The primary one is La Ilaha Illallah. La ilaha illallah. And we do that with a motion of our head. La ilaha illallah. In fact, all three are done with our head moving from our right shoulder to toward the left, or really toward the heart. La ilaha illallah. Because the heart is said to be the Kaaba within every human being. And it says there is a holy tradition in which God speaks and says, I do not fit into all my 18,000 worlds that I have created, manifested, but I dwell inside the human heart. So that's where the Sufi will seek Allah, or Allah, one of the names of God, the primary name of God, as revealed in the Holy Quran to the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, about a little over 1400 years ago. But true sacred tradition is timeless, so we don't feel that it's something of the past. You live it moment by moment. Any truth is a real eternal truth. So, and then we chant Allah, Allah. So, La ilaha illallah. Yes. What you will not hear in outwardly is that inwardly we are saying with the heart, Muhammad Rasulullah. And Muhammad is the messenger of God, not the only messenger, not exclusively messenger, but the messenger who brought the Quran, this revelation, the messenger of God. And the mystics have seen the deeper meaning also of this phrase, as meaning really that in this case that Muhammad, peace be upon him, we say, refers to the human essential nature that all to all humanity, the Muhammadan, we call it the Muhammadan reality, which is the nature of all humanity. We could call it, you know, just as we say from the Christian tradition, we sometimes use the word Christ consciousness. It's a similar thing, within the Krishna tradition, it's that, you know, the Krishna consciousness. It's that universal light, or that universal reality of love or light or illumination inside every human being. So all of these sacred traditions are universal traditions, even though they have a specific names and terminology and practices that seem on the outer to be different to each other. They're really all of them universal, and that's what makes them sacred, really, that they apply to the human being. And so every tradition can see itself more universally or more limited. And I think our challenge today is to interpret our sacred traditions in the more universal way, and to realize that they're really inclusive, and that we can't put one on top of the other, that otherwise they would not have been revealed. We have to realize that God is the one who is in charge of the creation and of humanity and of the sacred paths. And so, we call God Allah. That's the revealed name of Rahman, the All-Merciful, Rahim, the All-Compassionate and Loving. And there's a beautiful phrase in Quran that says, call on Allah. So call on Allah, or call on God, or by any of the beautiful names of God. So by whatever approach we have to God, God welcomes us and answers us. And so we shouldn't, feel that we have to know something special to feel close to God and to call God. God is near to each of us and really waits for us to call upon, I have to say him in English. I sometimes say him or her, They're obviously God, the essence of divinity is beyond, has nothing to do with gender, although it manifests gender, interesting enough, in creation. So our second name is Allah. And so we invoke God through calling, again, moving our head, you will see. And it's very simple, and it's very easy and rhythmic. So Allah, Allah, Allah. and feeling, you know, this kind of almost like a pumping of divine presence into the heart, and from within the heart, then it answers Allah. And then we go to the third name, which is who is called the name of essence of God. Who. Essence of God, or breath of God. We can feel it as God's breath in us. And then we'll, after chanting those three names, then we'll rise up and form a circle. And you will all be invited to join the circle. We might make two circles and chant the God's name, Hai, the living one. Hai, yeah, Hai. And everything will, you know, kind of flow. It's just like join in to dance, and you will see that it flows quite naturally. So maybe you would be interested. I'd like to allow you to ask questions. anything. It can be anything. I mean, you might be surprised to find this tradition now, embodied and embraced in the West. Maybe you feel, how could, you know, such an Eastern, or such a tradition, Arabic tradition, or come and now be so comfortable in the West. So is that a question? Or let's hear some questions. You're students, after all, so you should be inquiring. Yes?
And how often do you go here?
How often we come? We come once a week.
Once a week.
Twice a week, actually, really. I mean, we come more than once. Once a week is this, zikr. And that's recommended for all the Sufi orders. They have zikr once a week, what you will experience. And then they come, like we come, there's a Quranic class on once a week, and then we also gather just among the dervishes themselves to sing, and we have beautiful hymns that we sing, and we get together for other things too. So, you know, it ends up being maybe an average of twice a week or something like that. Yeah. Uh-huh. Any other questions? Yes.
Yeah. What's the difference in this than, you know, the Sunni and Shia Muslims and so on? I mean, what is the difference?
Right. Between Sufism and the Sunnis and the Shia. Well, I think that Sufism continues the path that, you know, that the Sunnis, the Shias are very close to us, actually. We share many things with the Shias, interesting enough. And I don't know enough to really be able to say at what point we might be different. I know a little more in relation to the Sunnis, because I see maybe more clearly where there's a demarcation, you know, where I would say the Sunni practice is more the outer. It's very much based on law, Islamic law. It becomes very important for the Sunni population. And the Sufis, you could say, take that teaching of Jesus of putting the spirit over the law. So it's not that they really, you know, they don't go against the law, but they realize that there are levels of the human being that go way beyond just, you know, the law. And then again, it depends what you mean by law. So it's a very subtle discussion. But the Sufi path is to experience God directly.
So it's more spiritual.
In a way, you could say, it's more spiritual. The Sunni path is to lead a good life, of to learn what's right and what's wrong, and to follow the main prescriptions. And there's no question, there's a love of God, but there's always like a separation, you know, of God and practitioner. And I would say in the Sufi path, the practitioner loses themselves. So the practitioner disappears in God. That would be, you know, in a sense, a goal. One of my teacher described it as, but it's not a disappearing, like a complete extinction, like you would say. he said the image he used is like a diamond in water. So that in a sense it's to become that diamond, but that diamond that has no self left, no sense of, oh, me, or I want this, or I am this, or I own this, or I do this, or I'm going here. No, it's all divine consciousness that is moving. So it's a different, it's a very different level, the Sufi path. And it's a path that the very different, it, you know, it says there are stages of human, let's say, spiritual evolution within a lifetime. So the beginning of the path is, you could call the Sharia, which is mostly what the Sunni has. They mostly stay with the Sharia level, which is the first level. The Sufis go through Tariqah, Hakika, Marifat, and they go higher than that. So they keep going into the mystery of the human being, because for them, the human being has no end. It's not a limited form. And I think in the Sufi, Sunni vision, the human is... tends to appear more limited, you know. But, you know, I don't want to become negative, but I'm just saying that the path is not complete. The path that the Prophet Muhammad brought to humanity is not fully demonstrated at all by the Sunni path. In fact, it's only just a piece of it. Only the Sufis, and I'll say this quite clearly, you know, have the fullness of the path. And all the great, beautiful human beings of the Islamic world and history, all the great saints, people that we love in the Christian tradition or in the Hindu tradition, but the Christian, like a Saint Francis or a Meister Eckhart, these are all the Sufis. You don't find them in the so-called Sunni tradition really so much.
But
so
those
yeah.
other branches, like them. Why do they stay at that level? Why do they stay at that the first
why
level?
Do they stay there?
Why don't they go up like you?
Yeah, that's a good question. Why do certain human beings long for the whole thing? And why do certain others not? You know, it's a good question. We have to ask ourselves, really. I don't know. You know, Sufism has had a great following in the Islamic world. It's more in modern times that all over the Islamic world, Sufism has, in many cases, you know, either been culturally exterminated by, you know, outsiders, by colonialists. The colonists came, did a lot of damage. And then by their own governments. And then once they lose the thread, it's very hard to pick up, because Sufi is a continuous thread. It's like you were, if you were holding on to a thread that went from the Prophet, or let's say to Jesus, alayhi salam, we said, let's say from Jesus to your time, and you're holding that thread. Well, if someone comes and cuts the thread, it's very hard to recreate that thread. What you need is then a new infusion of that, because the real tradition is heart to heart to heart to heart. Of course, God can make it begin anew anytime, any place, but the kind of natural law of Sufism is that it's unbroken. It's an unbroken stream. So Sufism will go back, inshallah, we say, or we never know. We always say, that's why we say inshallah, because really what do we know, you know, really? Only God, we say, is the knower of all. But it's, you know, it's very likely that Sufism will go back from the west back to the east and be, it's already also in the east, it's continuing now in certain places. Very strongly, there's a revival now of Sufism.
So it's mostly in the West?
What?
So it's mostly in the West?
That I don't know. I mean, there are many Sufi orders that are living in the East, but I would say that there's a regeneration that's happening in the West, which always has to happen with anything real. It's like, think of your bodies. They're constantly regenerating. And, you know, we couldn't survive if they didn't, if our blood cells weren't new, our hair, everything is regenerated. So the same with tradition. It needs always to be renewed. And, in fact, in Sufi tradition, there are certain beings who are called the renewers of the tradition of the light, because their hearts are so powerful that they, you know, they bring light for future generations. And I think that it has happened here, that there have been some extraordinary human beings who have, in a sense, regenerated certain lineages of Sufism, and we will see that in the future. But definitely it's still in the East, but it's just not before it, like in Ottoman Empire or when India, during the times of India, everything was Sufi. People were Sufi. You know, if they were Muslim, they were mostly Sufi. Not always, and that's why you had a few Sufis, you know, or quite a few, being killed and that drama always goes on. But, so it's really an impoverishment of the Islamic tradition not to, when you exclude the Sufi path from it. Because that's the real path of knowledge. We say it's the path of knowing yourself, and you know your Lord. It's the path of self-knowledge. Yeah.
In school we have learned that Sufism has certain, I don't know if you could call it guidelines or something, but it's like you give up something materialistic to embrace God or something.
You give up materialism.
I don't know if you call it ascesis or
asceticism.
Asceticism, mm-hmm. Okay.
It's part of the path, but it's part of any spiritual path, you know. Mm. People are, anybody who goes into a monastery or who's studies seriously any tradition will, part of the path will be a giving up of things, you know.
You.
Because it's called a purification.
Mm.
So actually the first part of the Sufi path is entirely, really, it's an emptying out, we empty out. But, you know, we don't so much put the asceticism on the outside, but more on the inside. Mm. And so it's more trying to clear out our, you know, those things that get in, that are very oppressive to us, that is our heavy ego. So the heavy ego, when it comes into a Sufi path, is sort of purified and refined. It like goes through a filter. And it becomes a more refined soul. We call this the refinement of the soul. And part of that happens through fasting, like we do in the Ramadan. You know, some Sufi orders are more ascetic. We're not what you call an ascetic order.
Okay, so it's not just materialistic, it's also kind of spiritual.
Oh yeah, it's on the spiritual level. But you know, it's interesting that we're not, we don't have to be take a vow of poverty, for instance. Again, some Sufi orders do that, so there's a whole range. But mostly, people lead a householder life. They'll have a family and children, they will have a business, or they'll work, but it can be very simple. You don't usually find Sufis heading a big corporation, but it's possible. It's very possible, because Sufism is so subtle that you could have the head of a corporation whose intention is really solely to help others, you know. And it could be like a hidden Sufi. So it's subtle. That's why I would say the path of Sufism is also the path of subtlety.
Not so strict.
It's not that strict. It's called the middle path. Islam actually is called the middle path. That was something that the Prophet put emphasis on. So, and there was someone in his community, actually, who, I think he castrated himself. And the Prophet said, you know, why did you do that? This is not, our path is the middle way, so we can have relationships.
Could you elaborate on the middle way? Because when I hear the word, middle way. I think about, for example, Aristotle.
Aristotle. Yeah, what did Aristotle say about
it? He said, I don't know the English term, but it's like the golden middle way.
Oh, you said that? Yeah. Well, exactly. That's what I'm saying.
The line between poverty and you know, enrichment.
Yeah, and the middle way, it's not an easy way to take. I mean, in some ways it's easy. It's natural to the heart, but the middle way has different levels. So it's an ancient wisdom, though. So it hasn't been spoken solely by the prophet. Usually, if you hear words of wisdom from one holy being, you will hear them from another holy being. Usually, you know, you find echoes, reverberations of the same truth, because these are basic truths of the human being. So the middle way is also meaning the heart. The heart is the center, is the middle of the human being. It's in the middle of the circumference of everything. So, I mean, I think that's one of the deeper meanings of middle way. You know, you could say not extreme, but it also going a path that has the focus of the heart. And so we say actually that the intellect comes from the heart. You know, it's the heart-centered intellect. This is where true intelligence comes from. So that's part also what it means, the middle way. Yeah. But, you know, the asceticism is, again, as you said, it's not just on the exterior. So we can be a wealthy Sufi. But the poverty, the real poverty, and the poverty that Jesus spoke of, but the poverty that the Sufis have is the fakir. It's called fakir. You know, you've heard that word like in the Arabian Nights or something, the fakirs. Well, it means the one who is empty of the world. That's what it means. That's the true asceticism, that it's an inner sense. That means that you're not attached, that you know, you're not craving, you're not attached to the outer. And then there are deeper levels of that too. Again, where you are empty of yourself, and where you become God's vessel. So you become like a lamp. And God's light is shining through you. And it's not, again, the me doing it. Then that's the truth. The final Sufi is the one, a total abandonment in God. And God is the one who's moving. God is the one who's speaking. God is the one who's hearing. God is the one who will rise up in a few moments to make zikr. You know, this is another level of asceticism, you might call it, or the way of the true poverty. Yeah. Yeah, and the prophet said, he said, "Fakri, fakri." He said, "So, poverty is my pride." You know. Yeah. Good. So, do you want to ask anything else about extremism or what? I mean, you know, I'm always aware when I have the students, you know, of the experience that you had as a society and how painful that must have been. Is that right? And then all these events. I mean, you've gone through a lot as a people, I feel. And but may that bring great blessings, because when we go through difficulty, you know, there's fruitfulness that follows. And so maybe what it's called to that reflect and on these deeper aspects will bring about a very beautiful result. I actually saw on a television program recently where they had a happiness index, and I think the Danish people were at the top, I think. Yeah. Right? You know that? Isn't that amazing? That's beautiful. So you're a happy people as a whole. That's good. Do you feel that way? Or? Inshallah.
You talked about the comparison between Sufism and the Sunni and Shia Muslims. Uh-huh. And then you said the thing about the laws. And I just want to know what sort of laws you do have that's
laws.
Similar.
Because mm-hmm.
mm-hmm. you talked about the fact that the Sufis was more
yeah,
on
the spirit and
mm-hmm. but you must have some sort of laws.
Of course.
In comparison.
No, of course. Of course. Yeah.
So I just wanted to know, like,
well, we have, you know, the basic principles, and it's said that the, I mean, it's much more complex than we normally think of it. Usually we say when the law, and that's, you know, the prayers and the fasting, and these are the spiritual laws, but they're really principles. And so the, you know, la ilaha illallah is the first, that affirmation which comes naturally from the heart of God, that the heart, our inner heart, is always affirming God. So that's principle number one, pillar number one. So sometimes the laws are identified with the five pillars of Islam. And, you know, pillar number two is the prayer, the salat. So if you look at it, all traditions have some form of devotion, of prostration, of, you know, offering. That's two, pillar number two. Pillar number three is salat, zakat, is the charity, offering charity. And it's, of course, again, it's specified. There's a certain proportion, to make it simple for people, in a way, and that's very wise. There's a certain percentage, it says, of what you own or what you earn that should go to charity. So it's not just left to everyone to figure out, oh gosh, what should I give? And, you know, and then sometimes you feel like you have to give too much or too little. It's specified. So it's a communal thing. And it came, of course, from the time before we had income tax. And, you know, the community had to support itself. So that's part of where it comes from. And the deeper reason is so to encourage people to be charitable, because that's part of who we are, you know. The third thing is, the fourth is the fasting during the month of Ramadan, and from dawn till dusk. And the fifth is, it says, the pilgrimage. If once in your Hajj, yes, Hajj. So, exactly, you have it. You know it. So, but there, you know, the Sharia, it has much, much, much more subtle branchings. And so, how we are with each other is part of the Sharia, how we should treat another person, you know, being grateful, and all of these things which are really come maybe more under the category of recommendations for the spiritual path or for a beautiful life, you know, could also be classed under the Sharia, interesting enough. So it's not just a legalistic thing. But how we get to that place where our soul is refined so that it wants to do these things. Because one way you can force people, you can just say, okay, you have to do 5 daily prayers, you have to fast, you have to do this. This is not very pleasant for anybody, you know. And some countries do that. It's governments or, you know. But that, I think, is disappearing, that aspect. The other way is to inspire love in the human being and love in the heart. And this is the way of the Sufis, really. I mean, it also exists in the Sunnis, definitely, but that love, that burning love that will make you fast or that will make you want to pray and want to share what you have with others, that's usually in the level of the Sufis, of the mystics, you know, to open that love, which is within each of us. It's there within each of us, but it needs that key, you know. So the key is a mysterious thing. What turns that key in the lock of our hearts? Or it's a drop, you can say, that falls onto our heart and then makes our heart a green garden, you know. But that's usually given to the mystics to do that. Yeah. Yeah. Good. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. You know, in religion, normally there's a goal. You know,
a goal.
Like,
mm-hmm.
In Christianity, you want to go to heaven, or I don't know. But you know, do you think that you obviously also have goal? You know, but do you think that you say that every religion the path to God doesn't matter as long as you're on some sort of path. So it doesn't matter.
As long as you're what? On some path.
On some path.
Yeah.
Do you think that you as Sufis,
Or
other Muslims. Do you think that you're closer to that book than Christians?
No, that would be wrong thinking. Absolutely. That would put us further away from our goal. As soon as we start thinking we're better, I'm better, or my religion is better, actually that diverts us. We can love our path. That's different. But that thing where you think you're better, no, that's wrong. And unfortunately, it seems to be ingrained in all of the traditions. We all stand there and think, God has given us all wonderful reasons. I mean, each of these sacred paths is extraordinary. It's so bewilderingly beautiful, every sacred path. And so, of course, each practitioner falls in love with the prayers, with the means, and the words and everything, and the holy texts. But the unfortunate part is when it becomes like, oh, I'm better, just because really of ignorance, because we don't know the other paths. We don't know the depth and the beauty of all the other paths. So we just have to assume that they're as good as ours. But that's an interesting question. Yeah. But for a minute I felt I didn't answer it because I forgot the question in my answer. And you said, do we have laws? Well, one of the basics is kindness, compassion. To treat every human being and every animal with great kindness and compassion. So our immediate teacher called Lex Hickson, who was a disciple of Musafir Effendi, who brought the tradition here, Noor felt that he didn't want to kill a fly or a mosquito. He'd let the mosquito eat him. This is the degree to his own nonviolence. And compassion for other creatures. So, and again, you have great diversity, in that. So one can be compassionate and still maybe kill a mosquito, different beings. But compassion and kindness, this is what's emphasized in Quran. And again, I want to say, it's sometimes the things that are overlooked. And again, I think it's sort of more rule-bound oriented. Oh, if you don't do your five prayers, then you're not. I've heard this. You're not a Muslim, which is totally wrong. It's just wrong, completely wrong. So the one who is a Muslim, really, in the true meaning of the Quranic revelation, is the one who loves God and loves their fellow human beings. This is a Muslim. I mean, I would say if you try to find one definition, and that is the one who is submitted, who loves God. Because when we love, we are submitted to the one we love. You can't love someone or love something and not be submitted to what you love. You can't feel superior, to the one you love. Otherwise, you won't love that one. So it automatically makes that Islam, that submission in love of melting away. Submission is not just, putting your forehead on the ground. Submission is opening the heart and saying, yes, yes, God, yes, I'm here, or you are here, even better. Yeah, but go ahead. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah?
I don't know exactly how to say it, but I will try. Some religions are one of the bigger, and when you are saying that that it's wrong to feel better than other people,
right?
Yeah, you're saying so your religion is smaller than a lot of others' religions.
Mm-hmm.
So you hasn't a goal to grow bigger and have more people, and that doesn't matter.
I see. That's interesting. Yeah, that's an interesting question. It's a good point. But if you have a delicious drink and you see people around you who are not drinking, your natural tendency is want to share that drink. So it's the same thing with the religions. When people, each of us is participating in a religion or a spiritual path, that they see how much benefit it has brought to them and how it has brought them new life. Of course they want to share it. But, you know, there are different ways of sharing it. And, yes, of course they want to share. So it's, you know, I'm not saying you have to think your path is worse. That's not true. You have to think your path is so great and so wonderful. And, you know, thank God that you have been sent, that this has been sent to you and you've been sent to it. But we can say it's the most good. There are different, it's just a very subtle difference, you know. And that's what we call with the cultivation of the soul. That the soul can say, oh God, I love my path so much, thank you so much. But it doesn't mean at the same time you have going on in your head, you know, oh, all those poor other people, they just, you know, they don't have anything. That would be undermining God's generosity. Because one of the things that is happens in us, and it says, don't think badly of God. And that's one of our teachings, you know. Do not think badly of God. So we always think beautifully of God. So if God is the generous, how could God really deprive, you know, millions of people of good? So everyone has a path of God. Go ahead.
Yeah, but how did you become a Sufist yourself?
Yeah. Well, you know, and then you have to say whether you claim to be a Sufi. No. I'm not sure I would even call myself. I call myself that to just place myself within a certain category, a certain field.
So how did you get
into that field? Yeah, by only by divine destiny and goodness. Because I was, I mean, I was also searching. Sometimes it might just fall on your head. There are experiences, you know, that just fall right in your lap. And you don't have to make effort for them. But sometimes you have to search and be thirsty. And I was thirsty, you know, and searching. And I was about, whether I was 28 or 20, I can't remember when I met a friend, 28 or 29. And so, but the thirst itself, the quest itself, is already the answer, usually. Because if we say Allah did not desire us to come, we would never be thirsty. If Allah does not desire us to come to the well, we wouldn't be thirsty. So Allah creates thirst in us, spiritual thirst. And, you know, that can come through various things. Maybe one's childhood, or who knows, some people come that didn't have a happy childhood. So, you know, they're not settled. The world is not comfortable for them. Usually, people have come here because the world is not comfortable for them in some sense. Or maybe because they don't understand it. But the interesting thing is, it doesn't have to become more... As you initiate it, as you go through the first part of the path, you can actually feel better with the world because you understand better your place and the reason for it. And you've been educated in also in relationships. The world is creation is about relationships. If we have that wisdom and that knowledge and guidance, how to conduct ourselves in relationships with the whole world, we'll feel a lot better, you know. And we can still be experience God in this world. This world, everything is possible here. You know, we just say, oh, it's a bad world. We don't say that. We never say that. Because this is Allah's creation. This is the manifestation of God, this world, this creation. It only becomes negative in a sense if we're misguided, if we don't know where we are. And then we make wrong choices, and then that has repercussions, and it goes on and on, you know. And we fill ourselves with heaviness. And so... But once, you know, empty out, and then with the guidance, it's a very different place. Very different place. Yeah. Alhamdulillah. Good. Yes?
That's because it's sort of to that question. You used the example with the drink. I just thought that maybe some guy you used an example that you have a drink, you taste and it's nice and you want to share it with others.
Right.
I just thought that somebody may have shared their drink with you, and that's how you came.
Yes, that's true. Exactly.
Okay.
That's a very good answer.
Okay, because...
Yeah, because I didn't finish my answer. Actually, it's true.
Yeah.
Thank you for...
So maybe I think that some person, some relation to you, or what?
Oh, no. This was a... he was a... You know, we call them friends of God, awliya. And you, they're not always visible or known, but in this case he was the head of this Sufi order in Istanbul, Turkey. And it's was an ancient order and, you know, became renewed in the 1700s or 16. And then Efendi became, we call him Efendi or Sheikh Muzaffer, became the head of it. He was, again, this is all by divine. Nobody just imposes themselves to be a head and they're not appointed. You okay? You want some water? Could someone, Asana, could you get water for our, do you want warm water?
No, it's okay.
No water?
No.
A little water?
No.
No water?
It's okay.
Bring her no water. Or you want some water? Bring her something. So he came, it's all very intricately intertwined, because our understanding of how things work is so narrow. If we could see really how things work, you know, we'd probably be so astounded we wouldn't even be able to function. So it's such an intertwining of circumstances and things. But in any case, through all those intertwining circumstances, I met Sheikh Muzaffer. And he is inescapable. Once you met him, I felt I couldn't escape him. So became his... I didn't know anything. And I had looked at the Quran years before in part of my spiritual search. It didn't make sense to me at all. I read the Arbery version. Didn't make sense. It's very interesting. Once I took hand, it was a totally different experience. And this is what's said about the Quran, that some have said that the Quran is a bride and she lifts her veils for, you know, her intimate ones. So we don't necessarily understand the Quran, can't approach it just like a book to understand. In a way, it requires a certain level of initiation, you know. Inshallah, tonight, for all of you, will serve as a level of initiation. You know, you don't, not in a bad way, you can, it'll just be like a light. It'll be like a level of light in your heart. Yes?
Is it okay for you to, to interpret,
to interpret?
Inter-
yeah. Good for you.
Other religions to a new religion, is it okay to take something for your religion and someone else and
make something different?
Yeah.
That's not so recommended. Our own Sheikh, I mean, again, the American Lex Hickson, practiced in several different traditions. He practiced in Buddhism, Tibetan Buddhism, in Orthodox Christianity, in Sufism, in the path of Ramakrishna, you know, the path of love and bhakti, and Zen. But he said, don't mix them. Don't mix them. You know, the tradition. So you don't take a little bit of this and mix it with that. And each tradition has its own integrity, like a tree. But it mixes inside, of course. Mm-hmm.
It has been very modern to create some new religions and new groups, and maybe there's not more than 20 of the persons in the group, but it's very modern to take something for each religion and create something.
Right.
But that's not the...
No, and I'll tell you why. Because the goal, as you spoke, the goal of the path is to merge into the source, is to, you know, we could express it with different phrases, to return to the truth or to become the truth, to merge into God. And it's not, if you take different rituals and mix them together, that's not necessarily going to lead you there. The only thing that takes you there is a real path where you go beyond yourself, your limited self. And that's not, it's not an easy transition. In fact, we call it in this path dying before you die. So we actually have to experience a death. And I know this is spoken also in mystical Christianity, you know. So we have to experience a dying of our limited self. And that doesn't happen by, you know, sort of necessarily mixing different things together. It, you know, you can have a beautiful rituals, and some groups have done that, and you go and you enjoy, and some Sufi groups maybe, or where you go and you enjoy a little, you know, this kind of prayer, a little Christian prayer of the heart, and then a little Sufi, la-la, ilala, and a little that, but that's not going to get you where you really want to go. You know, I'm not saying it's bad, but it's not bringing to the goal. Because the point is not the ritual, enjoying the ritual. You know, the point is, if it's a genuine ritual, but it's a window, and it's something to support you, but the real path is a path of the heart, and of the heart recognizing more and more its own Lord, and recognizing more and more that we are in Allah, in God, all the time. And that recognizing more and more that it is God who is manifesting us moment by moment. That's the path. I mean, of the Sufi path. And so it's whatever gets you there, and that some of it is suffering. You know, it's laughter and tears. Tears is part of it, you know, our suffering, and maybe humbles us, or maybe our suffering makes us turn more to God, you know, and asking help. Our suffering definitely polishes us, you know, refines us. Suffering is like a, call it a polishing. So the Sufi path is a polishing of the heart. That's another term for it. Yeah. Good. Alhamdulillah. Good. Yes?
So realization and cleansing would actually be the same in that case? Or
in a way, it's true. It's, if you empty out, there's a natural realization. Our own, everything is innate to us. Everything we have really inside. There is guidance from outside, but the further steps, the path, it must come from within. Otherwise, we will not truly transform or become. It's a becoming who is originally here, who is truly here. And that happens on this earth. We had to come here. You know, we will not be the same when we came in as when we leave. And so life is this journey, and it's a journey of maturing, of growing. It's really exactly like the metaphor of the fruit is such a good metaphor. We can leave this life like maybe we just had the flower of ourselves, maybe just a fragrance, you know, of potential. Or we can leave this life as a ripe, fully ripened fruit, you know. And that's, you know, I would say more the goal, to become that full fruit, which is truly a full expression of the self. And when I say self, I mean the divinely, the divine self, who is, you know, each one of us is, but we don't know that. And so it's coming to know that, who we are, really. It's coming to know who we are. Yeah. Good. Good. Yeah.
Tell me if I'm stepping over the line.
Mm-hmm.
But I was just wondering, because I want to know how restricted you are in Sufism in comparison to Muslims in general.
How restricted?
Yeah, because I noticed that none of you are.
Oh, shame. Not all of us wear this.
Okay.
Oh, no.
But I see that normally in Muslims wear scarves.
That's true.
To cover their hair.
That's true.
And I noticed that none of you girls do. And I don't know if this...
You mean we don't cover everything?
Yeah, you don't cover
everything.
Yeah,
we're everything. Not like this. That's true. Yeah, we're not very strict.
Okay.
we try to be true rather than strict.
Okay.
We aim for truth and sincerity rather than strictness. Yes, I would say as a general kind of description.
Okay.
You know, but so strictness, it's more from the inside. We try to aim true, so we hit the mark. Yeah, it's different.
Also, in comparison to most Muslims, don't eat pork.
Right. Well, most.
I don't know.
It's so funny. There are many Muslims who drink in the Muslim world. Actually, it's very funny, but you will very rarely. The Muslims who eat pork are very rare. It's very interesting.
Yeah. And I just wanted to know, like, how in comparison
well,
to those things.
Well, kind wine, kind Schwein. That's what it is. Kind wine, kind Schwein. What? Of course this is Islam. No, he's right. I mean, Ali's right. But we don't. I don't stand over people and say that. You know, the, as I said, love does it, really, most of it. And so whether someone has a glass of wine or all these things is not so important. Because if they go far enough, they might see, I don't need this, or I don't even want this, or... You know, but it's we don't impose here so much. But yes, he's right. We try, let's say, again, with a little more on the trying side, say we aspire to the same principles. The scarf is another issue. You know, we in Western society here, so I just talked about it a couple of weeks ago. It's a subtle issue, you know, what the scarf means. It's a form of contemplation or reminder, you know, that one is always on retreat in God. It's kind of that. But we can very easily lose that. And then it becomes just a custom, you know, of covering. So nothing is imposed. Everything is really, hopefully, comes up according to one's own spiritual development and one's own spiritual needs. I think that's more, we're more on that level. Yeah. But, of course, we embrace the whole, you know, we offer the salat and the fasting in the Ramadan and, you know, all of that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But in a gentle way. Well. All right. Are we ready for zikr? Good.